Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt are joining me this evening. How are you guys?
Good.
Yeah, pretty good.
Great. So again, thank you to Apex Pro for continuing to, you know, sponsor another episode here. They are the ultimate driver modification for racing, autocross, and high performance driving events. You can go to apextrackcoach.com to learn everything about the company, and go to the Apple App Store and search Apex Pro and download the free app. And we will kick this week off with a preview of Circuit of the Americas.
Yeah, so Circuit of the Americas is this weekend. It's the inaugural race there in Austin, Texas. The venue is kind of most well-known for being the Formula One track there. It's been hosting Formula One since 2012. And, you know, we got a lot to look forward to. I think we're all pretty excited for it and excited to see what it looks like out there on TV and whatnot. Just a quick recap, top five in the championship heading into the weekend. We got Newgarden, Dixon, Power, Rosenquist, and Rossi, which conveniently was the top five from St. Pete. Should see some movers and shakers this week in championship. Maybe a guy like Ryan Hunter-Reay, who's 23rd in the championship after his engine failure last week. But yeah, overall, lots to look forward to. Again, this is the IndyCar's first time at the Circuit of the Americas. They did have a couple test sessions in the offseason, including the spring training there. Guys, what do you think? It's going to be kind of a stab in the dark, Jess, but any shots you want to make at winners or who do you think is going to win the race? Anything like that?
You know what? Why not? I'm just going to throw it out there. I think Rosenquist. I think he showed that he's obviously got pace in St. Pete, even though he wasn't particularly thrilled with how he got his qualifying position. I think that he obviously showed us on race day that he should have been up there. And then obviously with having experience at Coda, I think it's going to play in his favor. And I'm going to say he's going to take it home.
Wow, bold prediction there. I am also going to go bold. I am going to say that Will Power is going to win pole and the race and get that nice $100,000 bonus for that's up for grabs.
Did you just say Will Power winning a race and pole is bold?
It was sarcastic.
Oh, okay. I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, I didn't get that one either.
I must have missed the sarcasm. I'm like, wait a second. You're obviously...
I'm glad I can still trick you guys.
I will go actual bold with no quotation marks and say that based on the spring training and whatnot, I'm going to go with Colton Herta. Could backfire. I'm assuming if we vote on this in the Twitter, I'm pretty sure Michael will win, but you know... Hopefully we got some people out there who are willing to take a bold step like me and Justin and say that maybe a rookie will show up and win. With Colton, yeah, did great in the test sessions there. At the beginning of the season, did great every session, finishing first, and second in the four sessions. Looked really good in St. Pete. Kind of got the wrong end of the deal there in qualifying. But yeah, really looking forward to it. I believe we'll have more content coming from Harding Steinbrenner Racing this weekend as well from Mike, his wife, and blogger Mike Knapp. So we're looking forward to that as well. So keep an eye out next week.
Yeah, we'll have Tyler Bell, who's one of the engineers there. He's a younger engineer, but a smart kid. I don't think my wife is going to be doing anything more than taking pictures, but she is part of the team this weekend.
She'll get the full experience, we'll say.
Yeah.
Which is great. So that should be pretty cool to see. How about, Mike, any other predictions? So other than winner, you know, predictions, hot takes, anybody think is going to suffer this weekend, anything like that?
So first off, I like your Colton Herta prediction. I do think he's in for a good weekend. Let's see here. Looking at the list, I'm wondering if the Foyt cars are going to kind of stay towards the back like they've pretty much been for the last couple of years now, I guess, at this point. I'm kind of concerned about them because they didn't really show a lot in week one down in St. Pete. And I know Lace's accident wasn't his fault, but they'd be my concern for the weekend. And my sleeper for the weekend is Pato O'Ward. I know it's his first race of the season. He had no spring training. He had one test day, I think, down in Barber the week after St. Pete. So I guess last week. But I think, you know, he's going to bring that team, you know, to a new level of competitiveness that we haven't seen from them so far.
I don't know if we'll see him being way up there, but I definitely agree with him bringing more competitiveness to the team. And I obviously think that's a good thing. I can't wait to see what he can do. Obviously, he had a great race last year, and just I just think he's going to be great. I hope that it comes very quickly, like the last race he did. It was fantastic. I hope he doesn't have any, we'll call him rookie hiccups, but I think it's going to be a good race for a lot of people. I definitely think Foyt's probably going to be in the back, just like you said, even though it's kind of a home race there for them. I don't think that's going to play in their favor necessarily. And I don't really see, I see maybe Penske struggling a little, not like a lot, but, you know, for Penske, struggling is like, you know, they finished like third. So I see Penske maybe struggling a little bit, it's just a gut feeling. I really don't have any particular reason. That's my only, we'll call it hot take.
Yeah, I guess I'm looking forward to seeing if Matthias Lace can beat Kyle Kaiser. I guess is that my sarcastic thing to look forward to? I don't know. I guess the only really hot take I have is St. Petersburg 2 years in a row. Not the author, Stephen King, has texted me and said that there will be a crash in the first turn on the first lap. And 2 years in a row, we've made it through St. Petersburg. No crashes or anything like that, so we're good to go. However, I do think the buildup to turn one at Circuit of the Americas, similar to that at the Grand Prix of Indy, where we usually see a first turn, first crash accident, long straightaway building up to a very slow turn. So my hot take is on lap one, turn one, we will see not only a crash, but I think there'll be some championship implications as far as maybe a guy like Simon Pagenaud or Scott Dixon involved in a skirmish there in the first turn. So it'll be an interesting start to the race, I'm predicting, and hopefully we can get through no accidents. But given the nature of the track, I think we might see something there. So, yeah, let us know if you guys have any hot takes there on social media, and just give us a follow and a shout on Pit Lane Parley, P-A-R-L-E-Y. And if you have any hot takes, we'd love to hear them. Something unique about this race as well is there is a bonus available for a driver in the field who qualifies on the pole and wins the race. That bonus will amount to $100,000. I believe it's the circuit that is offering that to the drivers, right? Okay, so it's not like it's Firestone or some sponsor. It's actually just the venue itself that's offering that. If I had to predict someone who's going to do that, it'd probably be Will Power, but then I'd be agreeing with Mike. So then I'll say, I guess I'll go Colton Herta. Why not? But as far as that bonus goes, Jess, good idea, bad idea, neutral, don't really care. What do you think about it?
I'm kind of neutral on it. I think that it is good for the drivers and the teams, obviously, but as a fan, I don't know that it's going to, you know, draw any more eyeballs. It could, but I kind of doubt it. But it is nice to see that the circuit is obviously serious about keeping IndyCar there. They want to prove to IndyCar that they're in this, you know, wholeheartedly. And I think that aspect of it is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with Jess. It's great to see that the, you know, people and promoters behind Circuit of the Americas are, you know, really trying to get IndyCar excited, and I think it's going to put a premium on qualifying, which could be a very interesting qualifying session. So I'm looking forward to it. I think you won't see anybody, you know, potentially waiting until the last couple minutes of a session anymore. These guys are going to want to get in as many good laps as possible to get a good shot at that bonus.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely doesn't hurt to have that added promotion, and it's just something a little extra for fans at home to kind of follow along with. So I don't think it hurts by any means. If Robin Miller had his way, there would be millions of dollars of bonuses at the Indianapolis 500, but you know, maybe one day. As far as, because one thing I think, as far as what I'm seeing on social media from fans at home is uneasiness about the venue, the Circuit of the Americas, only in how it's going to do as far as producing a good race. I think our baseline for that, unfortunately, is Formula One. If nobody's watched the endurance races there or anything like that, because the Formula One races there can be kind of a snoozer, which mostly has to do with the fact that Formula One can be kind of a snoozer sometimes. So are you guys at all, and we can start with Mike on this one, are you guys at all nervous for how it's going to look on TV, or are you thinking that the race is going to look pretty good?
I think it'll look pretty good, just, you know, judging from what I was able to see in testing a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, obviously we can't predict the future, but there, it's such a unique track. I think we're going to see some craziness in, you know, whether it be, you know, Scott Dixon getting wrecked in the first corner or something crazy like that. I think there will be plenty that will keep fans interested the entire race.
I am gonna say I'm a little worried. I'm not actually worried about the on-track product, but I am worried about how it's gonna translate to TV. And it's, in my opinion, it's because of how, how wide and sweeping the track is. I think it's gonna be a little bit hard to show, maybe the closeness of the cars and things like that. I think it's just gonna It has the potential to be a hard sell on TV. I think the race in person would be fantastic. Unfortunately, I won't be there this weekend, but I'm still looking forward to it. And I'm gonna give NBC the benefit of the doubt and say that they're gonna make the best of it.
I'm actually gonna deviate from the rundown here for a second to throw you guys off a little bit here. Because Jess kind of made me think of something here real quick. And we'll throw this to either of you two, whichever one of you guys wants to start. But given that this is a more F1-ish type of circuit, I believe Herman Tilke designed it. I could be wrong.
Yes.
He's the main designer for a lot of the new Formula One venues that we see. Obviously, so if you haven't seen a test session there, there is a lot of runoff at this venue, meaning that there's not gravel traps and grass. Rather, it's just kind of paved runoff. So if a driver were to make a mistake, their mistake might not be as punished as much as, say, a street course or a place like Road America. So to either of you two, do you expect IndyCar to enforce the track rules pretty strictly this weekend if we do see a guy get off the track and maybe gain a competitive advantage? And I'm not talking like anything crazy where they're completely cutting a corner, but, you know, if they have like three wheels off in a turn on the tarmac, where do you see that kind of playing out in the race?
Oh, boy. The one thing I will say is I did see the IndyCar Nation did a track walk today for those that are either in Austin or arrived to Austin early. And somebody tweeted a picture that the track had installed a little bit higher curbing at some points in the track to, you know, try to keep guys within the lines. Do I think IndyCar race control will be stricter at points? Probably. I don't think you're wrong there. It's tough to say how so without seeing them in, you know, practice where there's a lot of guys running in groups and whatnot. But I think you're onto a point there, a good point there.
Yeah. And before Jess goes, whatever they do decide to do, I just hope they're consistent. So if someone does it on lap one, if someone does it on lap 45, you better kind of keep the same benchmark for everybody. So go ahead, Jess.
Yep. That is a very good point. I hope that they are consistent with it. But what I hope for is that, yes, they, you know, for lack of a better word, they throw the book at them when they do something that they couldn't do on a track that had walls. They shouldn't be able to do it there either. Just because there isn't a wall and they're not going to tear their car up doesn't mean they can go off the course. I can see where it could go the other way too, but I hope that they strictly enforce the rules. And yes, like you said, I hope they're very fair with it. Everybody is enforced the same way.
And just to give IndyCar Race Control some props, you know, despite whatever anybody thought of St. Pete, they were, you know, consistent in their rulings the entire weekend, or at least, you know, on race day. So if they stick to consistency, like Matt said, I will be okay with that.
Hey, man, they screwed a bunch of people in qualifying. Sorry, I was just being the Everett Reddit user.
Continue.
Well, it's good that you actually threw in the they were consistent during the racing session, because if you said all weekend, I think people might have jumped on you for that one.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. And I don't disagree with you either. So one quick thing to touch on before we get our final preview of Circuit of the Americas here is one quick thing is that there may be some rain that impacts qualifying. So qualifying could be a little jumbled. You might get a guy like Takuma Sato. No disrespect to him. You might get a guy like Takuma Sato qualifying in the top six. So maybe he might not be there if it was dry. And then you might get some guys like Ryan Hunter-Reay, who might be in the back of the field. Who knows? But it's just may throw a wrinkle into things. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. But finally, it's been kind of the talk of motorsport social medias throughout the week. And Jim Aiello wrote an article about how preposterous it is. And we'll kind of touch on it in a little second here. But we can start with Jess. Where do you side on the whole Formula One versus IndyCar at the Circuit of the Americas and the comparisons being made to both series? Obviously, IndyCar is going to be nowhere near as fast as Formula One. However, fingers crossed the racing product is better. So where do you kind of, where are you as an IndyCar fan kind of side with what's been talked about on social media and fans from the motorsports world?
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that the racing product is going to be better. I mean, that's not even a question. I don't even think the F1 fans really have to question that one. But as far as the comparisons go, I saw one tweet, and I'm going to be perfectly honest because obviously it's been a hot minute. I do not remember who posted it, but it was something along the lines of the only interesting thing that Circuit of the Americas could do is actually like overlay, you know, like the fastest qualifying lap from F1 and the fastest qualifying lap from Indy, because then you would actually have a comparison. Because yes, F1 is going to be faster, but you could see where they're faster versus where the IndyCar might be able to make some catching up. But they're two totally different things. It's like comparing football and basketball in the same stadium. Just because they're in the same stadium, it doesn't mean they're the same sport. But that's just my take on it. But it would be interesting, at least in my opinion, if they did overlay a video of the two cars just to see, you know, the different aspects of the cars and the corners and straight line speed and everything else.
Yeah. First off, shout out to our homie Jim Aiello for the very well-written article in the Indy Star yesterday or Tuesday, one day this week. Check it out. The comparisons, he wants them to stop, and I kind of agree, although I do think it would be cool to see kind of a, you know, a shadow car on track of an F1 car versus, you know, Indy car, maybe during qualifying or practice or something like that. But outside of that, expert Marco Andretti put it best. F1 has a $400 million budget. IndyCar has a $10 million budget. And we all know IndyCar puts on the better race in terms of race quality. So I'll leave it at that and we can keep going.
Yes, did you hear that? Marco said something that we agree with.
I know, it's weird.
There we go. Shout out to Marco. Yes, to everything you guys said, I guess the only thing I'll add is Formula One is free to show up to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and try to beat an Indy car on the oval there. I guess that's all I got to add to that. I think that's the end of our Circuit of the Americas preview. So we're all three looking forward to the show, and definitely a lot of observations coming this weekend from Mike, who will be at the track. So we're looking forward to that. Moving on, another kind of big / weird / confusing piece of news that came out this week was, there are allegedly going to be a couple big announcements that come out from IndyCar in the month of May. This was according to Bruce Martin of Auto Week, who said that they have two majors announcements, and that's kind of all we got. I think Jace Fry said something like game changers, if I'm not mistaken, and that's pretty much all we got. I'm assuming that it's engine related. but that would be one of the announcements. So I guess I'm kind of scratching my head about the second announcement. So if we're trying to win the lottery here, if one of us can guess correctly, we're going to ask that person to predict the next lottery for us so we can get some more cheese funding going here. So Mike, what do you think? Do you think one of the announcements is for the engine, and any ideas what the second announcement might be for?
Yes, and taking a stab in the dark on the second announcement, I'm going to say some sort of windscreen for 2020 has been either decided on, or they have a concrete testing plan laid out, which I guess could be considered a game changer, in at least in terms of safety.
I like it. I'm gonna say yes, obviously, for the engines. I guess I shouldn't say obviously, but I'm going to say yes for the engines. I'm also, my stab in the dark is going to be McLaren full-time 2020.
Ooh, that's
all
a good
right.
one.
All right.
That's a good one. I'm going to say yes to engines and maybe Audi, which is kind of funny because obviously we touched on that in our last episode. That really came out of nowhere. That was going to be German. All this time we thought it was going to be like Kia, Alfa Romeo, someone else like that. In a perfect world, like Ford or Toyota. It really came out of left field, though. For the other announcement, I don't know. I was kind of hoping that they were going to do some sort of like 400-pound cheese giveaway to the poll winner for the Indianapolis 500.
If only.
If only. And then Jess could be like there to present it. But
I'll be like, and here it is.
There you go.
Now what are you going to do with it?
Here you go, Graham Ray Hall. I present you with a 400-pound block of cheese. But yeah, I honestly have no idea, and I'm bad at the lottery anyway, so don't ask me. With that, I guess we can throw it over to Mike for the first round Patreon shoutouts.
Yeah, before we get to Patreon, stay tuned at the very end of the episode. I know Matt mentioned potential for rain during the qualifying, which makes things a little hectic. At RaceCastWX on Twitter will be, I think Scott from the race weather team will be providing a little audio on some important weather information for the weekend. So with that, first round of Patreon shoutouts, let's start at the bottom this week. So thank you, Stephen King. Thank you to a new Patreon subscriber, Sean Crawford. Would love to meet you at a track at some point. Please come say hi. And Mike Silver, blogger man, Mr. Mike Knapp, Michelle, and thank you to Mr. Michael Goodyear.
Wait, something that's interesting that was pointed out to me on Facebook, or as Jess like to say, it's Facey Spacey, was something from Sky Sports about their IndyCar coverage, stating that, I don't know if it was just specifically Circuit of the Americas or for the rest of the season, that they would be running their races commercial-free. And after seeing that, and then after watching the Formula One race on ESPN, I was pretty jealous, I'm not going to lie. Just because when I watched the IndyCar race for St. Petersburg, I felt like there was an overwhelming amount of commercials. And so I had tweeted something out about, you know, in a perfect world, there wouldn't be commercials in IndyCar, even though, and I kind of tried to phrase it in a way where I said, this isn't going to happen. It's not possible. But then our buddy Phil Will Power jumped in, and then he had this idea of, you know, just kind of spitballing, you know, let's say IndyCar offered this package where you would pay somewhere, he threw out a number, I think it was like $65. So if you pay $65 for the season, you get all of your races commercial free. Jess, would you, and I know it's kind of a silly question because I think I know what your answer is going to be, would you do that? And then would IndyCar be in their best interest to look into something, to do something like that?
Okay. So first of all, to clarify, Sky Sports is going to run the rest of the races ad-free. And that, from what I understand from talking to one of our listeners from the UK, pretty much all of their sports over there are ad-free because they would totally throw a fit, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, if they tried to put ads in. So yes, I'm very, very jealous of them for not having ads. And then secondly, I tried to jump in you guys' discussion and y'all ignored me. So what I said is absolutely, I would pay $65 right now if you have the NBC Gold package. and you have actually watched the race replay on there, you probably already noticed, but that is ad-free. So I don't see why they couldn't just figure out a way to make that stream live, you know, ad-free also. And I'm actually perfectly content with the replay ad-free, but it was nice to not have to skip through those. It just automatically did it for me.
Yeah, I would probably pay $100 a season if we're just, you know, but I did see Foe's number of 65. I would gladly pay $65 to watch the races ad-free. I don't know if it would be in NBC's best interest, because obviously they, you know, they make money off advertising on commercials and whatnot. But if there was a way that NBC would be okay with it, IndyCar would be okay with it, and we could pay $65 to get it ad-free, 100% on board.
Same here. Yeah. And to think about it from like a British point of view, I mean, their biggest sport is soccer or football, which are wherever you're from. And you think about it, you know, that's 2 45-minute halves plus stoppage time. And those, it's just straight through playing with a, you know, 12 to 14 minute intermission. So, you know, their biggest sport is basically 90 minutes straight of uninterrupted, you know, game. And then like a couple commercials in between the half. So that's kind of what they're used to. So for a race, they're probably not used to a sport being broken up into commercial after commercial. So I really wish we did it that way over here. I know the F1 on ESPN is a bad example because of the, we'll say, urgency that that deal came together through, and how much that basically F1 presented it to ESPN for free, so they didn't feel the need to run ads anyways. So I guess that's kind of a bad example and unrealistic for IndyCar to compare it that way. But yeah, I would pay $100 as well for sure. And I know a lot of other people would. I know there's plenty of people out there probably don't care. My parents are not one of them. They would probably pay, my dad would probably pay $300 to not see the commercials. So, you know, maybe one day, like I said, I think it's a little unrealistic to think about it now, but it was a good discussion. And we did a poll and a lot of people chimed in saying that it was something they would be really interested in too. So that's really cool. So really appreciate the discussion with Faux Will and for everybody else who chimed in as well. The St. Petersburg numbers, looking back, you know, kind of a week out, the TV ratings were slightly up. I think it was like 0.02 higher, which is not groundbreaking, but also not terrible for the last race that was on NBCSN to start the season. And then as far as this ticket sales, though, the ticket sales were up 15%, which is really good. And I know you guys had touched on the fact that it was really packed that weekend. So that's good to hear. So something to just touch on super quick. And finally, before we get to kind of another round of Patreon shout outs here, the 30 for 30 team for ESPN, which is kind of a mini series of short documentaries, have announced that they're doing a documentary called Qualified that's going to be starring Janet Guthrie. It looks really cool. They came out with a movie poster. Janet Guthrie, one of the, you know, in my opinion, one of the most groundbreaking drivers in IndyCar history. You know, maybe not the results that we see on paper that, you know, are going to match up to some of the more elite drivers, but for what she had to go through and what she had to endure to get on the track, you know, I think is, did I say endear? I meant endure. For what she had to do to get on track, she was definitely iconic and someone who definitely broke down some barriers for people who followed her up the ranks through the years. I don't know if you guys read too much as far as details or if there is a lot of details released, but Mike, if you want to go ahead and share some thoughts on that you saw.
First off, awesome, especially awesome because NASCAR dropped her from their list for, you know, NASCAR Hall of Fame or whatever, which was kind of embarrassing to begin with. And then this comes out that she gets her own 30 for 30 documentary. All the 30 for 30 documentaries that I've watched are fantastic. So great, great to see. I'm definitely excited to watch it. If you haven't seen the artwork for the poster, go on social media. It's really, really cool. Kind of looks like the same people who did the Carlin posters last year, that same sort of graphic style. Either way, still really, really well done. So I'll give it over to Jess.
Yeah, of course I'm looking forward to it. I mean, obviously, being a female in the sport is huge. And then being a female fan is also kind of difficult some days because, you know, people don't appreciate the fact that females can work as hard and can understand as much sometimes. Not to knock everybody. I do know there are a lot of people who really are into it, but I'm really excited for her. This is going to be I think, an excellent film. Can't wait to see it, or documentary, however you want to call it. Either way, I think it's going to be great to watch. And yeah, like you said, she is groundbreaking, and not just in IndyCar, in NASCAR too. So I think it's going to be really, really an interesting watch.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like Mike said, 30 for 30 does a lot of great work. A couple of my favorites are Pony Excess, the two Escobars, the U Part 2, the Brady 6, a couple of really good ones. And it's something that I've always thought about of, you know, if they could do an IndyCar related 30 for 30, what would I want to see? And, you know, obviously Janet Guthrie, very deserving of having something done on her. And if I had to think of a couple others, or maybe just one, doing one about the life and legacy of Dan Weldon, I think would be super cool, from his rise to stardom to, you know, going to Ganassi and doing well, but, you know, not the results that people were expecting, then going to Panther and keeping the team afloat to being fired by John Barnes, only to come back and win the Indianapolis 500 because John Barnes' driver crashed in the fourth turn on the final lap. kind of up to the very tragic events at Las Vegas. I think it'd be really cool to see something done about that. Have you guys ever thought about, you know, what you'd like to see as a 30 for 30? You can go ahead, Jess.
Honestly, I haven't given it much thought. Another person that would be really interesting, just because of the diversity of everything that he did, was Brian Clausen. I mean, he was, you know, all over the place. So that would also be an interesting one, I think, just for the diversity of different things that he was doing in his life. So I think he'd probably have to be my pick.
I'm going to go old school on this one and go, I don't know, I have two ideas. I don't know which one is better. You know, AJ Foyt, Mario, you know, the Hall of Fame drivers of that era would be really cool to see. And also something on, you know, Langhorne Speedway and Ontario Speedway in California that aren't around anymore, that people don't know the legacies behind these super dangerous racetracks and what drivers put themselves through back then to race, would also be really cool to see.
Sweet. So we can toss it over to Mike here.
All right. So again, you know, thank you to all of our patrons and everybody who's listening. So thank you, Colin Taylor, David Lighting, our buddy George. Thank you, Jason Camps. Thank you to Carrie Chim. And last but not least, the last two are new here, is Lyndall McMurphy. So thank you guys very much. And I am going to hop right into my Stump the Hosts. So since we are at Circuit of the Americas this weekend for the first time, I thought I'd give some Circuit of the Americas trivia. You know, is evident by, you know, everybody who's watched something there or you know, us talked about the first corner, how you go up a pretty steep hill. What is the percentage of banking in the first corner or up to the first corner?
Oh, good Lord.
And I'll make it easy for you. It is a number under 20.
Go ahead, Jess.
We'll play Price is Right style.
18 degrees, 9 minutes.
Matt?
Price is Right rules, I'll say one.
Okay, well, that's cheating, but by Price is Right rules, Matt technically wins. It is 11 degrees of banking heading up into turn one.
What do I win?
You win a Pit Lane Parlay sticker.
Yes.
But just one, not the whole pack of four that comes in.
Four.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How many
stickers? You got to answer three more, right?
Yeah, I keep the three. The other three go to Jess.
How many? How many stickers do I need to trade it in for a craft single?
Oh, boy. 52.
Oh, man. You know how many of these I'm going to have to win to get that? That's crazy. Well, yay. Yay for craft singles and stickers. Moving on. There was a test at the Texas Motor Speedway during the week. I think it was Monday or Tuesday. Spencer Pigot, Ed Carpenter, Felix Rosenquist, and Scott Dixon were all there. Rosenquist actually, right before he came on the air here today, Thursday, came out with some comments saying that, you know, he was actually quite nervous for the test, understandably so. I mean, he did have very limited oval experience in the Indy Lights season when he was there a couple years ago, but otherwise it's always been road courses for him. And he even said to the point where he was dizzy. And so, you know, Dario Franchi was there coaching him, saying, you know, take it easy, don't crash, just, you know, ease into it. So I think it does really help him get those experiences. Spencer Pigot said something along the lines that was nice to go 200 miles an hour again and that he really missed it. So, yeah, all in all, good to see that Rosenquist had some good thoughts about it. Colt McCoy, for those who don't know, is a former NFL. Is he former? I think he's former, right? He's retired, right?
A Colt McCoy? Didn't he play for the Redskins and break his leg? Or
I googled it after I asked you guys the other day. I believe that his last season was last season.
Okay. I was going to bring that up, that Jess texted us that she didn't know who Colt McCoy was and we weren't going to get the crap on the show. But now that's kind of hard.
I mean, I'll own it. I had no idea.
All right. Colt McCoy, who's kind of a folklore hero in Austin, Texas, was a national championship winning quarterback at the University of Texas, is going to be the grand marshal this week. Jess also kind of asked us why the grand marshals are football themed. And she's got a good point. I mean, because football players and coaches and whatnot are probably the most famous out of the athletes, but kind of to Jess's point, and she can probably elaborate more on this too, is maybe some more diversity, maybe, Jess?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say they're the most famous athletes, but yeah, maybe. I mean, probably the most generally well-known.
Right.
Why all athletes in general? Why do they all have to be athletes? Like, you know, can't we have, I don't know,
George Bush,
some actor or, I mean, honestly, anybody who means anything to the community that the race is going to be held in, politicians, may not be the best way to go, but okay, we'll go with politicians too. Politicians are very polarizing. Obviously other celebrities kind of tend to be less polarizing, but there are some who are. So I think that it just would be better for general fan base if there were other kinds of people doing it. But you know, I mean, it's only been two races, so who knows? Maybe it's just kind of a weird trend that they're both football related.
Yeah, I think I said this to you guys. I wonder if it has something to do, maybe at least this year. You know, Tony Dungy is doing some announcing for NBC. I think Colt McCoy, you know, not doing anything NBC related, but I guess he played on NBC this year when he was on the Redskins. I don't know. But yeah, I would like to see a little bit more diversity, like when they had Channing Tatum and Barber last year, and I forget who they had. Didn't they have like a rapper or something at Sonoma a couple of years ago? I don't remember who it was, but I remember
Steph Curry.
Yeah, Steph Curry. Okay, he's not a rapper, but
yeah.
Close enough.
Good enough.
So yeah, I can definitely see where Jess is coming from on that one. I'm going to surprise you guys with a stump the host too, only because I just saw it come on Twitter.
Oh, please don't ask us how many college degrees Colt McCoy has.
No, it has nothing to do with Colt McCoy. Okay. So similar to how Alex Rossi calls his car Baby Girl, Zach Veach also has a nickname for his car. It is a female name. Can you guess it?
Kardashian.
No, that would be really funny though. Just one guess.
I have no idea.
Okay.
How about Stephanie?
No. Zach Veach has named his IndyCar Betty.
Just because?
Just because. And apparently Joseph Newgarden has named his car Jasmine. So there's some late breaking facts for you that should hold you over until the race starts this weekend. I'll let Matt move on now.
Well, yeah, there's that. Was it you who said Kim Kardashian like 30 weeks ago?
I hope it was more than 30 weeks ago, but yeah.
Oh, we're going to have to go back. It's going to be my new ringtone on my phone, Kardashian.
I hope that's in one of the first episodes that isn't on iTunes anymore.
Okay, well, we'll find a way to make that public again. Moving on here. So, interesting news out of Spain, and I hope I'm saying this right. Is it Movistar?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to roll with it. Movistar, who does publish the Formula One races in Spain, who they hold the commercial rights there. Since there is no Formula One this weekend, they're actually going to go ahead and broadcast the IndyCar race live in Spain for those who do have that channel, which I hear is a lot of people in Spain. So that doesn't hurt. So that's good. Good news. Two sad things to touch on during this past week. First off was the passing of Charlie Whiting, literally right before the race weekend started at Melbourne. He was the race director at Formula One, I believe, since 97. But he's been, you know, involved with the sport in various capacities, whether he's working with teams or with the FIA, I believe, since 1980. Based on the tributes and everything, was one of the most respected guys in the Formula One community. And, you know, he's probably most well-known for the guy who starts the races with the five lights and the lights going out. He's the guy who kind of controls that. So really sad. Our thoughts, prayers with his family and close friends. Very difficult right as the season is starting. Mike, I don't know if you have anything to add.
Yeah, I mean, he was an innovator, you know, in things in Formula One with safety, and to happen on the first race weekend of the year, right before the first weekend, is definitely tragic to see, and hopefully his family is doing okay.
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking. I hope that all of his family and friends, and obviously all the competitors and team personnel that, you know, he had contact with, I hope they know that all of our thoughts are with them at this difficult time. And yeah, to happen so close to the beginning of the season just has to be an absolute devastating shock.
Yeah, that's terrible. And then another sad piece of news kind of over here in the IndyCar world. Father Glenn O'Connor, who is the Catholic chaplain for the IndyCar ministry, also passed away. That was on March 15th. Sound like, according to what I read online, it was a battle with cancer. So super unfortunate there. So also, we'd like to pass all of our well wishes on to his family and close friends during their difficult time as well. So that'll be, I'm sad to hear. I'm sad to see Ron Paddock, and was always a positive guy to be around. We got two discussions to do before we get to our pitfalls. Like I've always said on the show, we never discuss politics unless we need to, and or political issues. And, you know, the more I say that, the more these things keep happening. So maybe I should stop saying that. But this one, and I don't even know how this started again. I know I've heard this debate before, but I don't know how it came back to being so. And the discussion is that IMS, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, should not be releasing balloons before the Indianapolis 500 because it's bad for the environment. Jess, we'll start with you on your thoughts for that.
I don't really know that this is a political argument. Environmental, yes. I guess you could steamroll it into being.
That's all the politics.
I was going to say, I guess you could steamroller it into politics, but not necessarily. This is not the first time this has come up, but this seems to be the first time that people are actually jumping on one side or the other. Obviously, I lived in Indy up until last year. This is not the first time that they put up billboards. It's not the first time that they campaigned against the balloons. So as far as it goes, I think this is the first time that IMS is really kind of taking it seriously. I know they've contacted some people about different types of balloons. The balloons they use are biodegradable, by the way. It just takes a while, but they do break down after a while. As far as where I stand on the whole thing, I mean, it is tradition, and I would hate to see them go away from it, but I do also understand the environmental aspect. So it's kind of hard for me to pick a side. I personally would be okay if it went away, as long as maybe there was other sort of tradition put into place. I've seen several different ideas thrown around. I'm not going to throw any of those out here. I'm not saying they're not good, but I just think that it needs to be well thought out. I don't think IMS is going to jump into anything without thinking about it. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn just from the aspect that I grew up there, and I've seen them every year since I was six in person, and it would be kind of sad to not have them.
Yeah, you know, I get tradition, and I get the people who are worried for the environment and say, oh, well, yeah, the balloons are biodegradable, but they take, I don't know, X number of months or whatever to degrade. Personally, in my opinion, I don't really care one way or the other. If IMS says, hey, listen, we hear everybody, instead of doing balloons, we're going to do a light show of balloons, that's fine. This one really Doesn't bother me either way at all.
Oh, I thought you were going to go on like more of a rant. I was kind of waiting. From my point of view, I feel like from an environmental point of view, I think there are bigger hills to die on. However, they're not wrong. And even if it is biodegradable, they do take a while. And is it necessary? No. I'm pretty sure if the balloons were taken away from the pre-race ceremony that all of our lives would continue and the race would still be good. Like I always say, please just do your own research and come to your own conclusion independently. And if it just happens to be different than what we on the show say, that's totally fine. As long as you have a rational opinion that you can, you know, back up with your own thoughts, that's totally fine. Don't believe the Twitter account who's posting about how much, I think it's called Balloons Suck or something like that. And they're posting like the IMS balloons and then underneath of it, pictures of like pelicans choking on a beach. And I'm going to go ahead and assume that balloons in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway do not end up in Atlantic City for a pelican to choke on. I'm just going to go out and go on a limb and say that. But again, they do have a legitimate point, and I would not lose sleep one way or the other if they continued or they didn't continue. So I guess we'll just see. And I'm sure IMS and Doug Bowles and whomever will come up with the good solution that may appease everybody. So fingers crossed there. I don't know why I said we had two discussions. I guess I was just squinting wrong, but that was actually it. So Mike, if we don't have any other sponsor shout outs to give, if you want to go ahead with your pitfall.
Yeah. So again, thank you everybody for listening. Come say hello to Mike Knapp and I at the track this weekend. I'll be there all weekend. So my pitfall is, well, Team Williams for their rough opening weekend, but more specifically, George Russell's delusion. He says he is not interested in battling exclusively against his teammate, Robert Kubica, at the back of the grid. George, I don't know if you didn't pay attention at all in the preseason, but as Jess pitfalled a couple weeks ago, they were late to the test. I think they got one afternoon of testing in because they were late with some new parts and whatnot. It's not looking good for Williams, and I get why little George Russell wants to battle for a position, but when his excitement from opening weekend is battling for not for position with guys like Carlos Sainz, who were at least one lap ahead of him, that's when you know it's going to be a rough season.
Yeah, like Jess said, George was probably one of the ones making the parts that they failed to make on time.
What did Jess say? Whittling them out of wood.
Yes, whittling. Yes. There we go. He was probably in that line of people whittling. Jess, I'm dying to hear yours, but I got to kind of interrupt yours first with a little prelude. Did you know, and this is for both you guys, but did you guys know that Danica Patrick made her broadcasting debut a couple hours after her first and only racing win of her career?
Wow.
Did you guys know that? She won at Motegi in 2008 and then immediately jumped on the broadcast for the final quote-unquote champ car race at Long Beach and was with, well, I don't know, whoever did it then. I can't remember. Marty Reed, or I think it was Marty Reed. But yeah, and they were praising her. She did look tired, but amazingly enough, she did fly from Japan to Long Beach to be there. So that was pretty cool. But that is a segue into Jess's pitfall.
So pretty sure that everybody can guess what my pitfall is going to be. The only thing that I have to say is that I'm super glad that I'm going to be at the track watching the Indy 500 in person and that I do not have to witness Danica during the broadcast because NBC has now signed her to be a race analyst for the pre, post, and during race shows for the Indy 500. I can only pray to, the heavens above that it is only for the Indy 500 because honestly, I may have to pierce my eardrums and gouge out my eyes if it's for every race thereafter. That's just because I cannot imagine that this is going to go well from the tweets that I have read. And I'll be honest, this week I have not been online a ton. I've had a lot going on otherwise at work and such, but I did not see very many positive comments She even on her own post about it had quite a few negative comments. So I just don't know what they were thinking. And maybe at this point, after reading everything, they don't know what they were thinking either. But we'll see how it goes. I'm hoping that it's not a train wreck.
Yeah. And to kind of your point, there was people saying, you know, like she didn't really care about IndyCar at a certain point. You know, after the first couple of seasons, she looked like she stopped caring. She was she had her foot out the door to NASCAR. She came back and didn't seem like she had that much fun. She's not like super excited and whatnot when she does speak. She's kind of monotone. Most of her thoughts are exclusively negative. There's so many more candidates that could have been picked, in my opinion. I don't know if...
Don't forget her comment about how she doesn't really like IndyCar anyways because everybody's too serious.
Ugh, Jesus.
yeah.
Well, and good news is she said it might be one and done. So, fingers crossed. But, Mike?
I am going to, for the first time ever, I don't think I'm going to defend Danica, but... I'm actually, and obviously I'll only be watching this, on tape delay or in the media center or wherever I, when I'm flying home the next day, but I'm kind of intrigued. I will admit I don't know what's gotten into me. I don't know if it's been a lack of sleep, but I am interested to see how she does. I get people's frustrations, wholeheartedly understand, but maybe the, pre and post race coverage, having her kind of with Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Mike Tirico, if Dale Earnhardt Jr. is doing it, I don't know if that's been confirmed or not, but I think it could be kind of interesting to have some different types of personalities in there discussing the race. And with NBC having, plenty of pre-race coverage this year for the 500, which is a nice welcome change, I'm intrigued.
That's fair, I guess, unless Jess wants to come in and bash you.
That's fair too.
I'm going to gag, but that's all.
Good enough. I'll segue into mine here. Mine is also Formula One related. So I actually thought, and we didn't touch on it too much in this podcast, if at all. I actually didn't mind the first Formula One race. I thought it was above average, to be honest. It was definitely better than the first race last year. One thing I was super intrigued about, though, was Charles Leclerc. He kind of got off to a rough start in the race, but towards the end of the race, he was about 12 seconds back from Vettel, his teammate, and was rapidly catching him to the point where it was almost like 8/10 a lap. And so pretty soon he was on the rear of Vettel, and there was like 5 or 4 laps left. And I'm like, oh, he's going to get him. Like, he's going to pass him. It's going to be great. I don't like Vettel. Down with Vettel. Take that. out with the old, in with the new kind of thing. And, per usual, Ferrari told Leclerc to back off, and it just pissed me off. I was super upset. Here it is, a guy who pretty much did everything right in the race, had like one or two kind of minor excursions, but kept it clean, had the better strategy than Vettel, was faster than Vettel. They had the same amount of points, obviously, since the first race, so it's not like Vettel's fighting for a championship and Leclerc is like P15 in the championship or anything like that. And to kind of already dictate at this point in the season that Leclerc is going to be backing up Vettel, how do they know? Leclerc could be literally the fastest driver in the field for the rest of the season, but, maybe he loses the title by 3 points or 2 points or whatever he cost himself because they didn't let him around Vettel. And I think it's a little early for Ferrari to be playing those games, and I think it's a little too early to be favoriting Vettel if they don't know for certain for the rest of the year if this isn't going to be a consistent thing where they're going to have to consistently keep Leclerc behind him, even though Leclerc's faster. So I was super frustrated. I really don't like Ferrari at all, but I do like Charles. So hopefully through the rest of the season, he can continue to show his pace and prove that he should be there and is not another Kimi Räikkönen who could never even catch Vettel, to be honest. So I don't know if you guys watched the race and saw that as well or had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I stayed up and watched the race. It was definitely better than last year. I wasn't super intrigued by the race most of the time, but it was a decent race, and it just confirmed my hatred of team orders of don't pass him. Now, if Leclerc passes him and does it without damaging his teammate, it's one, like Matt said, you're 100% right. It's the first race of the year. Two, you know, you're not racing then. It's just follow your teammate. And I would imagine Leclerc was probably very frustrated, but did the right thing and didn't try to rock the boat in his first race with a Ferrari. But it was incredibly frustrating to hear the radio transmission of that.
Yeah, I think that I've made it fairly clear, maybe not necessarily on the show here, but definitely in social media previously, I am so anti-team orders. And I just think it's sad, honestly, that the teams feel that they need to do that. I think it's fantastic in IndyCar. Well, even, I hate to say this, but even in like NASCAR, how team owners just let them race. I mean, that's the whole point of racing, right? You don't have one driver out there to be your driver and another out there just to get data. That's not what you should be doing. So I think it's just, honestly, just a joke. The team orders are just a joke, and hopefully one day they'll go away, but I'm not going to hold my breath on that.
Then the good news is that Ferrari was excluded from the podium because they couldn't finish in the top three. So that was also fun.
Yeah, very, very fair point there. So I guess that wraps up our Coda preview and pitfalling F1.
and Danica.
And Danica. Although I'm intrigued by it, I'll just end there. I know that's going to make Jess queasy in the stomach. But with that, you know, again, thank you to everybody listening. If you happen to be in Coda this weekend, please say hello. We'll be at the track all weekend, all day, every day, even if it's raining. So come say hello and hang out and talk racing. And with that, Jess, feel free to sign it off.
And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.
This is the RaceCast weather forecast for the IndyCar Classic weekend at Circuit of the Americas. I am meteorologist Scott Martin. The good news is that the forecast is starting to trend a little better for the event weekend as rain chances are starting to drop, especially for Saturday. We'll start off with sunny skies on Friday morning with temperatures in the lower 50s at 8 a.m. and winds out of the south-southwest at 2 to 5 miles per hour. Clouds will begin to move in during the day, but we'll still end up with mostly clear skies by the end of the on-track activities. Afternoon highs will top out in the mid-70s, with winds out of the south to southeast at 5 to 10 miles per hour. No rain is expected at this time. We'll have a weak system slowly moving by well off to the north of Texas on Saturday, but it will be close enough to fire off some scattered showers and maybe a few thunderstorms. The good news is that today's model runs have trended much drier throughout the day, but still show some activity in the area. We'll start off with cloudy skies and temperatures in the mid-50s at 8 o'clock, and we'll warm up to right around 70 degrees for the daytime high. Winds will be out of the south to southeast at 6 to 12 miles per hour, and the chance of rain will be around 40%. If any showers form and move over the track, they will be quick hitters and shouldn't last all that long. Sunday will feature more clouds than sun to start, but the cloud cover will diminish somewhat, becoming partly cloudy by the end of the racing day. The system will still be close enough to the area that a stray shower or thunderstorm may fire up during the heating of the day, but at this point, the chances of that happening are slim. Temperatures will start off in the lower 60s at 8 o'clock and top out in the upper 70s. Winds will be out of the south at 6 to 12 miles per hour throughout the day, and the chance of rain is only 20%. This forecast was made and recorded on Thursday morning prior to the event, so remember, the weather changes and so do the forecast. Be sure to stay up to date by following us on Twitter at RaceCastWX and liking our Facebook page. We also have live radar up and running on our website, along with forecast updates at RaceCastWeather.com. I am meteorologist Scott Martin signing off. Have a great weekend.
The music for this week's episode was done by Impulse Studios, web design courtesy of A30.com.